Every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back to that one studio. It's your boy, C-Rock, Made Up Show. Got another great guest for you. He's been on the show a while back. I've been doing this for 5 years, so I figured I'd bring him back because this dude always causes and creates something new for himself. He's had a lot of success in the past, but he just shared something with me we'll get into that he's working on now too. And I'm just intrigued by Tony. We got Tony Whatley in the building. He's a 20-plus year serial entrepreneur, business coach, best-selling author, podcast host, speaker, and also stand-up comedian, improv comedy comedian. Can I call you that now?
I haven't been paid to do it, so you can't say I'm a professional at it yet.
Yeah, but there's a lot of artists out there that haven't been paid for their art yet. So,
oh, absolutely.
And they're artists.
I mean,
right?
I probably spoke on my first 10 stages before getting paid to speak, so I get it. Yeah.
You know? Yeah, man. Yeah. So, and I think indirectly it serves you. And, you know, money's just a currency of transference of energy anyway, and you're getting some kind of currency or transference of energy anyway. When you're on doing improv. So, yeah. But Tony, welcome back to the show, man.
Thanks for having me on, man. I always enjoy our conversations and I like your charismatic personality and you always ask some fun questions.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Kind words. Man, listen, so, you know, it's been a little while and I know this answer to this question changes depending on when I ask it. So let's kick the show off the right way. Tony, what are you made of?
Adrenaline. Gonna keep it simple.
Yeah,
that's the thing that popped in my mind.
Yeah, you know, and that has a lot to do. I didn't mention when I was introducing I didn't read the whole bio here, of course, but you're into cars, man, right? Performance and
racing things over 200 miles per hour and things like that. So I enjoy all aspects of motorsports.
Hey, can I tell you something? I don't think I've shared this on the show yet. But I was at Risk On. It's a conference my buddy Todd Alt runs. He's done it for 2 years now. He's out in Vegas. And I was out there for the Formula One, the F1. And he put us in those cars. And I rode an Indy car around Las Vegas Motor Speedway. But not driving, of course, because I don't have I've never did it before. But I was in the back. They had a two-seater.
Yeah.
And we went around there and hit like 180 plus, two laps around. And it was the baddest ass thing. I mean, I was blown away by it. Like it's better than roller coasters. It's better than a lot of things.
Cause you get to hear all the sounds of the engine and it just sounds amazing. And then you get to feel the wind and then the G forces as you're cornering and the braking is really hard. When people aren't used to doing road course or any kind of track type racing, they don't understand how hard we brake. Cause you want to brake, you want to accelerate as long as you can, as fast as you can. And then brake at the very last seconds before you take the next turn. And so it's like really putting you into your harness or your seatbelt as hard as you can. And that's not normal for most people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the other thing is I wasn't driving, right? So I was like no control.
You were goosed, man. You were goosed. You had a Maverick in front and just hoping that he didn't have the same outcome, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is I was thinking as I was going around the track, besides just enjoying myself, being totally just thrilled, I was thinking like these dudes do this like inches apart, three wide sometimes around those curves. And I couldn't even imagine that. Now, I guess when everybody's moving at the same speed, it's not as drastic as somebody sitting still and going past, but pretty awesome, dude. I want to do that again. I want to take my son out there and do that again. So I get it. I get the adrenaline thing. What kind of cars have you driven?
Mostly American performance cars. So I enjoy modified the Dodge Vipers that I have. And one of them was about 1200 at the wheels. And I was trying to build it up to about 1500 horsepower to go over 200 miles per hour and a half mile zero. So standing mile went over, it went to 209 in a standing mile with about 1000 horsepower. So
mostly straight.
No, that was with the other Viper. The other one I used for the road course. So I do both.
Okay. And right turns too, not just left.
Oh, I do every turn. I'm not a NASCAR guy. And that's the fun thing about NASCAR. I'm not a big fan of NASCAR because it's more based on character. I think of NASCAR, I like the technology of the cars, but really they're all the exact same cars with different wraps essentially because they're really regulated in different things. And the people that are really big fans of NASCAR, it's almost like WWE wrestling. they're in it for the characters. They like the driver. They have the story, and NASCAR does a really good job of building characters and making like these controversies and dramas. And that's really why people watch it. They're not really car people.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Well, I'm sure there's some car people, but mostly it is the wrestling fan.
Absolutely. There 100%. Are some car people, but it's the bigger draw is the characters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can imagine like the wrestling fans that, yeah, man, Ultimate Warrior is my guy. You know, it's the same thing with when they're talking about Earnhardt back in the day and, you know.
And even Formula One is a lot, it's very similar to that. It's based on teams and drivers because most of the people in the audience don't understand the technology that goes into the cars. They don't understand that that's cutting edge technology that they spend billions on some of these programs. And so to have that appreciation of what you're actually watching is a different technical level than most consumers can take.
Yeah. You know, there's one guy in Formula One right now that keeps winning pretty much every race. So, and I don't know how he's doing that. If those cars too, they're probably pretty similar and what they're capable of and what they're allowed to push the limits to. So this guy must be just a better driver, I guess, or
better reaction times, bigger nuts. I mean, it's just staying in that straight a little bit longer, milliseconds longer, and hitting the brakes just a little bit later gets you a little bit over these long, the races are very long. So every fraction of a second you can save on a lap adds up over time.
Yeah. Yeah. So adrenaline, when did it start for you you started noticing that you were like kind of an adrenaline junkie? What age were you?
I was a kid. I mean, I was the kid that always would put the extra bricks under the bike ramp. I would jump over my friends. I used to do BMX, and then I got into freestyle biking, and then I became a skater. And you've probably seen that in the last year too. I started skateboarding again at age 50 after taking 35 years off. And so I'm always looking for things. And I used to love stuntman type shows like The Fall Guy and Dukes of Hazzard, anything that had explosions and just stunts. I was always fascinated with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You remember the movie Rad?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 1980.
That was one of my favorites, man. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. So what basically have you basically taken that adrenaline, thirst, and is that something that you used in business all these years?
I would say that as an entrepreneur, I actually am okay with, I like to take risks, but they are calculated risks. Most people think that people are just, wild and crazy and doing stupid things, but most entrepreneurs, they accept a higher level of risk than most people who are not entrepreneurs, but it is calculated. It just looks crazy to most people that haven't understood the backside of that. So I think that I've always been willing to take those risks because I learned at an early age growing up without money that if you remove risk, you also remove reward. And most people just want to play it safe nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're rewarded with comfortability and then complacency and, yes, fake security, fake. Yeah. Yeah.
Even guys doing what you and I are doing today, you still see a lot of them like to have this really fast acceleration to get to a level. And then they start playing it safe. And they start doing things like the status quo. They don't want to rock the boat. I know you and I both rock the boat, but most people kind of get to a level where they start to risk like, oh, if I say the wrong thing, I might offend people and then I'll lose all my followers and I can make less money. So that they do the same thing as people in corporate. Whatever got them to where they're at, they kind of just flatline at that point and they don't want to keep pushing it to keep going even higher.
Yeah. So how does adrenaline and risk tie together?
I think I just don't have, I guess I don't have much regard for my personal safety if it looks like something I'm going to have fun with. When I was younger, I'd be martial arts or getting into fights and just doing stupid things or racing cars and things like that. So it seems kind of reckless, but again, I'm okay with that because if I die doing something I love, there's way worse ways to die. Way worse ways to die. So I think that people just worry too much about everything, injury, safety. I mean, I'm covered with scars head to toe and, every scar is a good story. And so I'm not really worried about those kind of things. And so when people like worry about things that are like not even dangerous, it's like, you're worrying about things that are not even dangerous. That's why you're stuck where you're at.
Yeah. And have you found this like in your businesses that you've started? Did you find a point in the business where you just couldn't get that rush? And that's when you decided to do something about it, exit, close down, whatever the case was?
Yeah, I think so. When we sold LS1 Tech, that was 2007, and we had a multiple seven-figure exit on that regard, but it was also the market was starting to shift, and our bread and butter for that website was the Corvettes, the Camaros, and the Firebirds. And at that point, GM had already canceled the Firebirds and the Camaros back in 2002. So we were 5 years into a platform that doesn't exist anymore. We didn't know they were going to keep making Camaros in 2010 and later. And so a private equity company came in and offered us a really good deal, and we sold the company. And it was because we wanted to go do something else. Like, I was focused more on the executive path in oil and gas and utilizing that engineering degree that I put myself through school with and building different companies on the side. So I just had a shift in my life. And also I was a young father at that time too. So your life does change in different phases of your life.
Yeah, that's true. Now, when you sold that company and that private equity firm came in, was it something that you were already thinking about, or did they find you, or did you find them? How did that work?
Yeah, the website was never on the market. They actually approached us, and they had a pretty unique way of doing that. They reached out and they kind of gave you the kudos, like, hey, we see you're the number one in your category for General Motors. We would be entertaining an idea to be able to acquire your company. Would you like to have a talk? And oh, by the way, we purchased these other five sites, and those sites were the number ones that I recognized because we're in that kind of a peer group. And one of the sites specifically was Corvette Forum, and I knew the owner, Troy, at the time. So I basically just texted him and I said, hey, did you sell your site to this company? And he's like, yeah, I can't tell you how much for, but you should talk to them. And so I knew his site was about the same size as ours. And I said, if he's telling me to go talk to these, I'm not going to blow them off. And yeah, that's how it kind of worked out.
And how did they buy websites like that, like multiple wise? Like was it on the gross revenue, or was it on the profitability? Like, how, and you don't need to give us exact numbers, but like multiple wise, like, how does that compare to other businesses?
It was a 5x EBITDA multiple.
Okay.
And so we were making about $400,000 a year profit on that website after even paying ourselves. That was just on top. And so they looked at that 400 and they just multiplied it times five. So that's kind of how they came out with the offer. And the reason why is those websites had a lot of traffic. We were seeing over 100,000 unique visitors per day. So imagine that as your storefront. If you're a brick and mortar business owner out there, imagine having 100,000 unique people walk through your front door every day. It's ridiculous how much traffic we had. And with that amount of traffic, we could also generate a lot of advertising revenue. So at the peak, we had about 150 different companies advertising on our website, like General Motors and Cadillac and Goodyear Tires, and all these big names were advertising on our website. Also to mention all the speed shops and racetracks and things like that around the country. And so we had a recurring revenue business model where a lot of these companies would pay 12 months in advance because we'd give them a little bit of a discount. So nobody did month to month. We at least had quarterly invoicing or half month for 5% off. And if they did an entire year up front, we gave them a 10% discount. We also grandfathered in their advertising rates. As long as they never broke contract with us and they kept on as a sponsor, we never raised the rates, even if they were going to be there for years. So yeah, our rates always increased, but we kind of enticed them to stick around, and they gave a good forecast on cash flow, which allowed people to go, hey, this company's worth quite a bit because they've already been paid way in advance. They already know that these people are going to keep coming back. They could see how many times people were logging in and how the average time they were spending on our website, which back then was probably about 15 minutes average, which is actually a very long view time for a unique visitor. And so that's where the value for these companies. And also, I would say the highest valuation comes from the database of the email addresses. We had at that time about 200,000 email addresses that were very specifically targeted to that industry. So it had a lot of good pieces that they would like to have for that kind of money.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Love it. Yeah. So then how did you get that many members? Like, did it start spreading word of mouth, or did you, like, what was the method you used to grow it?
You know, we just did giveaways. You know, the thing is, like, we didn't have Instagram or Facebook and stuff like that back then because we sold out before those even existed. But the thing is that we could see based on our server logs that X amount of people were visiting the site, but we can also see how many were registered with accounts. And early on, it was about 50% of the people would actually have an account versus the traffic. So we're like, how do we get this other 50% to register? And we just started doing giveaways. So I came up with a win-win-win scenario where I would go find one of the current advertising shops or manufacturers and say, hey, can you donate $1,000 gift certificate that will get spent with you if we do this giveaway every month? And they were like, oh, hell yeah, we'll be the featured sponsor and be on the main page and give you $1,000. And so what we would say is, okay. And then we go find a second sponsor and go, hey, can you be the junior sponsor for this month for $500? And they're like, yeah, hell yeah. They always wanted the notoriety. And so the $500 gift certificate went to the people who are already registered. So if you were already registered, you still had a chance to win every month. The $1,000 one was for the people who were newly registered within that month. And we give it away at the end of the month. I would do it live. It'd be an Excel spreadsheet to pick the random number. And that got about probably about 50% more registrations just because of that giveaway thing.
And how did people find your site? Was Google working back then? Is that was it through Google searches or?
It was probably Yahoo or something else back then. Google was starting to emerge. I remember the last 3 years, Google was kind of starting to take over. But, you know, we were also in the media because when you have such a large community, it was no longer me writing articles for these magazines. It was me and my hundreds of thousands of people that I represent. And so they treated us just like VIPs in any of these vehicle releases and engine releases and new model releases. I got to do a lot of test drives and write a lot of articles for the major magazines because of my audience. And so, you know, we got treated that way. And that's how they found us, just word of mouth. And anyone was wanting to build on a Camaro or a Corvette or a Firebird or a LSX engine retrofit into an old car, we were the number one website on the internet.
Gotcha. Okay. And so taking that, once you sold that, have you been able to replicate that process that you used in that company with other companies, even though technology advanced and what have you, with giveaways and sponsorships and people to, you know, donate different things to be a sponsor? Like, have you replicated that?
I've replicated that with clients and some of my friends and some of my former staff that wanted to start their businesses and help them build communities. Nowadays, even with my 365 driven brand, it's still an entrepreneurship community. And a lot of the things that I implemented in the leadership style, the core values, the culture, the giveaways and enticements, like that's how I built the community. Right now, it's a Facebook group. We're going to move that off of that because Facebook's killed us on the algorithm. But about 4,000 people joined in the first year when I was really pushing it. And so when you understand that the same methods either work on Facebook groups as they do on forums and such as that. So it's all, how do you become a community leader? How do you attract more people and look for that common interest? And it's also not about you. Like, I think a lot of times people think it's about followers and building something up to represent their own name, and they want to stand at the top of the community and pound their chest. And I've never been like that. I'm the kind of person that wants to facilitate communications and bonds between the members themselves. That way they remember where they met their best friends and they keep coming back to come hang out wherever they met. And that's what I've done with the automotive and the 365 driven and several of my clients.
Yeah. You know, Tony, when you're saying that, I'm just like, kind of, I always assess everything that I have going on. Right. Mm-hmm. So I felt like that for a while, like I got to get known, and I did got to get known, and it's got to be C-Rock this and that. But then when I started that one, our company, that what we do now is I think you might be familiar with this, but I've developed over 1,000 shows that I'm friends with and relationships with podcast hosts. So when we connect people, I get more kick out of now me not being on shows and my brand pushing up like that, but more of that one is like the Tony and facilitating these relationships with guests and hosts. Yep. And then watching businesses start out of like thin air investment, like people raising money, you name it. And that's what, you know, so I'm the same way with that. Like, And I got to lean into that more now that you just said that, because that makes a lot of sense. Being the catalyst for those relationships. Because you know what? We all have different personalities. And I think if we can do what you did, we can cause exponential impact versus just us trying to do our thing.
That's right.
And I think our egos can get in the way sometimes of really impacting a lot of people by getting in the way.
It's better to be the connector. Think about this. We are in similar industries and we both had different industries as well in our background. The people that we admire the most in any industry are the ones that have the most connections and are also willing to facilitate those connections. It's not the person that has the most money or has the biggest company or brags about how much revenue they're doing every year. Like, those people are ego driven. But how many times have you been somewhere, even like when we go to these speaking events, when you're introduced to someone you've never met before, but everybody in the room is like, you need to know that guy. Need to know that guy. And like, he's not famous. He doesn't have a big following. You need to know that guy. And it's like, why? It's because he has such amazing connections and he's willing to help.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the money tends to follow. Like, everybody's so focused
on the
money.
They're not poor. If you're in that kind of a situation that you've built yourself up to being the connector, the hub, the guy with the answers, the resources, you don't get there by treating people poorly. And so that's why he's highly respected.
Yeah. What do you think of the new Corvette style, body style?
I like the Z06 version, the wide body. I never would buy another base model Corvette. I've had several Corvettes, and I learned not to buy the base models that come out the first year. Always wait for the higher performance models because they hold their value, they handle better, and they just look better.
Yeah. But you like the way it looks now, the new look?
I do. I like the Z06. I may get one of those at some point. You know, they're still trying to do some dealership games and marking them up. I'm not going to pay over sticker for a Corvette.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like them too. I think they kind of resemble more the sports car of like the Lamborghini and the Ferrari kind of look, you know? Yeah.
And they're equally good on track. I mean, it's a very, you know, roughly for a Z06, you're paying $150,000 for that car. And it's going to keep up with everything that's less than $300,000 in the exotic market.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know if I'd ever get one. I'd ride in someone else's, maybe rent one or something. But
I still like my Dodges. I like my Vipers better only because they're more rare.
Yeah, yeah. I love the Vipers too. They're sharp. My cousin, when I was younger, had a Nissan 300ZX, and he had it all souped up, and it was pretty fast.
Yeah.
It's pretty fast. All right. So now lately you've been doing some other things and I want to catch up with everything that you've been getting into now. And so kind of, you know, get us caught up and then we can dive into whichever one.
Yeah. You mentioned the comedy thing. So for me as a speaker, we're always looking for ways to enhance our speaking and get more presence and also to work on the crowds and understand how to react to people and use those moments that, you know, say something or comment or heckle you or whatever. You got to be sharp with yourself. You know, you got to be quick on those kind of things. And, you know, so I decided to make myself really uncomfortable and I joined an improv comedy school here in Houston. And it was a year long. It was like four parts, you know, a quarter each. And you had to go like once a week and it was like 3 hours and doing all these skits. And it was really difficult because I didn't, and like public speaking was very difficult for me to do that first. And that was about 2017 when I got into that. Comedy is another level of discomfort because here's the thing, C-Rock, when you and I are speaking ourselves, we're in our own character. We know who we are. We know how to refine that character and who we are. And so you're always stepping into that zone of who you truly believe you are on the stage. Improv comedy, you don't get to be a character because it gets assigned to you. When you walk out on a stage and your counterpart calls you an 85-year-old sexy grandma, you have to sound and walk and move and act like an 85-year-old sexy grandma. So it's not like you're assigning your character again. And so that kind of thing goes back and forth and it's fun. And they add a brick to the wall and you add a brick to the wall and the story kind of builds and you're always trying to elevate that to get to the next thing. And so that thing kind of keeps you guessing. And if you do a lot of reps in that, you start to realize like, I have a lot of characters and a lot of different voices and a lot of things. And that also helps when you're telling stories from the stage, because now you can act them out. Feel comfortable doing it instead of using your same voice and your same presence to act out stories.
Yeah. So was there a time where it was like really hard, like there would just be blanks and you didn't know what to say. And then all of a sudden you notice a click and there was a flow and you were able to get into flow with any character.
Oh yeah. I think you definitely get stumped sometimes on those stages, but here's the funny thing about that. You're just really reacting to what they're saying, just like the audience is reacting to what they hear. Sometimes the funniest moments are just your actual reaction. You're not trying to fabricate a reaction. You're just reacting to things. And if you're really good at things, like improv is not about slapstick humor and like stupid stuff. It's a very intellectual type comedy because you're having to listen to things, process it, and kind of add more flavor to it.
Yeah. So like, it's like, whose line is it anyway, right? That kind
Absolutely.
Of format.
Yeah, great example.
Yeah. 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 I had a theater class in high school and I'd never laughed as hard as I have ever when we had improv, the section that we did on improv. Like I just, and was there any limits? Did they like say, hey, you can't cuss or you can't get too dirty, or they just say no limits?
They, since it was a school, they definitely had some minor limits. They just said, don't talk about insensitive things that especially that piss people off in the news. Like, you can save that for when you're doing it on a real stage and a real show, but at school, like we just don't know everybody's, I would say politically, it was probably most of the people in the room were not aligned with me and I was okay with that, you know? So.
Yeah. You know, I noticed, when I did that before is that like, you have these things inside of you already, these characters, because of all of us, especially the, you know, we're in our 40s now, we've seen pretty much every personality out there. And so you have these things inside of you already. We're just so inhibited, right? And inhibition has come over the years. Kids aren't inhibited. Most kids aren't inhibited until they get shut down or told to shut up or whatever, or they get discouraged by their peers. So did you find yourself, like, were you inhibited at first? Like, did you feel like an inhibited feeling or?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You're not comfortable stepping into weird characters and using weird voices and weird mannerisms. And the funny thing is that all of us, like you said, have those programmed in our minds, because if you were just to act out, like you mentioned before we fired up the microphone, you're going to go spend time with your family. And you said that all these families have different, each of them have different characters, but I bet you could imitate every single one of them if you tried, probably to good degree, like how they act, how they speak, how they carry themselves, their nervous twitches. And so we know that that all exists, but it does feel really weird until you do enough reps to be able to kind of do that on your own.
Yeah. And so where are you taking this from here? Where's it? What's the vision with this?
You know, I just wanted to see if I could do it. And yeah, that first month was really uncomfortable, and you kind of get in the flow of things and you actually start to learn the tactics of improv. There's a lot to it. I mean, I think if you really wanted to master it, you'd probably have to do it twice at school and understand, like, getting more reps. And you know, so it was very tactical, and you learn from different instructors. And so everybody has, like, their own styles and their own advice and their own hints. And so, yeah, we have a rough structure that we follow. And you know, when we make an error in the skits, we kind of act things out. They go, hey, you know, instead of doing it that way, I would recommend you to do it this way or say it this way. And you're like, boom, you're like, okay, that makes a lot more sense. Right. And so, you know, I think that I don't plan on being a comic, but you never know. I might go do an open mic or something like that, because I enjoy comedy.
Yeah. And so when you left there, after you've gone a few times and then you go back to your regular life, yeah, with your wife and
my irregular family and life. Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever, but not the improv life. Right. Did you bring some of that into there and then, like, feel like just being more free with that? And
oh yeah. So anybody that goes to my Instagram, you'll see some of the skits, cause I'll do some sketch comedy stuff. And that's something we also learn in improv. And there's actually another class you can take on sketch comedy where you're actually writing out stuff like you would see on a sitcom. And one of the most viral videos I got on my program is, like, I kind of made fun of the Rolls Royce, the lean, you know, everybody's leaning in the Rolls Royce seats for their selfie photos.
I saw that. Yeah. I saw that.
So that's a sketch comedy thing. I wrote that out.
That's where that came from. Okay.
And I wrote the scenes and I said, okay, I'm going to go film this thing. And everybody loved it. Even Baller Busters shared it and had like 200,000 views on their page. And you know, it's hilarious. It's like, so
I remember that now.
So I'm making fun of all these gurus in our space. Like, you see that content, and I make fun of the people that are like the real estate gurus. I've got one that I'm going to film probably next week that's going to make fun of car salesman type, you know, sales training gurus. And so I've always looking for these pieces of skits and stuff, because I like to make people laugh, but it's also a good way to poke fun at the clowns and the gurus in our space.
Oh yeah. You know, you should do a podcast host.
Oh, that will happen. Everything's fair game. Everything's fair game. I'm totally going to make fun of all kinds of stuff because it's just fun.
Yeah. Another one would be, I got so many ideas. So I want to overload you. So when I have ideas, I'll DM you. I'll send you a text or DM and say, hey, try this one.
I'll give you the preview on the car salesman. You know, the scene from the original Fast and Furious, Vin Diesel, and they're sitting in the car and he pulls up in a Supra and he's like, nice car. What's the retail on that thing? And the guy's like, it's more than you can afford, pal. Ferrari. Yeah. Right. So I'm going to cut that scene where they go, hey, nice car. What's the retail on that thing? And it's going to cut to me sitting or standing next to a car in a cheap blazer. I'd be like, well, thank you for asking about the retail price. Before I get to that, I want to tell you about all the features this thing has. And I'm going to be trying to sell the car to them. Like, and it's going to cut back to them. And they're just going to have that stone face look at me. And I'm going to keep trying to sell them. Then they'll just end up driving away.
That's going to be great. That's going to be great. Have you ever seen The Goods, the show The Goods?
I haven't.
It's a movie. You should check it out. It had Will Ferrell was in it. And what's the guy's name that played Ari Gold in Entourage? Name slipped my mind.
I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
But it's a comedy movie, but it's all about cars, used car sales. It's great. So check that out, because you get some ideas for that too.
Yeah, both those guys do a lot of improv in their movies. They'll have a loosely based script for each scene, and then they just improv it. That's why when you see those bloopers at the end of a movie, they don't have anything to do with that what you saw, because their guys are experts. They're just improvising their way through a scene.
Yeah, you know, a lot of those people started up in Chicago. What was that school up in Chicago called?
Laugh Factory, or there's a few of them. I don't know where they're located though.
This one was like called like the Saturday something, or I forget. Yeah,
Saturday Night Live was a lot of them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, Saturday Night Live, but then there's the one in Chicago. I forget what it's called, but they, a bunch of them have met there, and then they went to Saturday Night Live.
Yeah.
Man, can you imagine that being life and being able to make money doing that?
Yeah. It's crazy. You know, and even Joe Rogan moving to Austin a few years ago, he's kind of turning Austin into the comedy hub now. He built his own comedy club there and bringing all the comics, like these A-level players, to come, you know, hang out and live in Austin.
I love it, man. I love it. Well, Tony, where can people find you and engage with you? Like, where's the best place if they want to go deeper with you?
I would say just look me up on Facebook or Instagram. I'm busiest on there. On Instagram, you can go to 365 Driven. That's also my website, 365driven.com, for the podcast, books, and all the other things.
And as we wrap this up with this last question, what has podcasting done for you, whether it's guesting or having your own show? What have you noticed personally and professionally benefits of being a podcaster?
The podcast is a good way to give a gift to somebody that you wouldn't have otherwise have a conversation with, because everybody wants to reach out to people like yourself and myself and go, hey, can we jump on a call and do a virtual coffee? And can I pick your brain and all that kind of stuff? And it's very like a, man, I got no time for that. It's just too busy. So when you say, hey, I'd like to feature you on my show, and it's a top 1% rated show, now I'm presenting you a potential gift versus an ask. And so there's a dynamic shift and more people more receptive to going on to a show rather than having to spend 15 minutes with some stranger getting their brain picked, which doesn't sound fun at all. And so right. I think that it builds your authority in the space. Only if you're consistent and you keep doing it. I think a lot of times people shoot themselves in the foot by starting a podcast, they have it on their website, and then they don't do episodes for like 4 months. And then people are looking at it, they're like, well, this person fell off. They're kind of inconsistent. It shows a lot about you. So those of you that are in that space that dropped off, you probably should just delete your evidence that you started one until you pick it back up again.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I'm a maniac now. I do like 5 to 8 of these a week.
They're fun. They're fun. They're good conversations. I look forward to these kind of interviews.
Yeah, it's a blast, man. We've had some crazy people on here and then some very successful people, but we're just really dissecting what's making them, and it changes all times. Like we said, you've been on the show before, but like we found more things out about you this time than last time. So it's human beings are you know, evolving at all times. So very interesting. Well, Tony, I appreciate you coming back on, man. It's great to see you, and I love what you're doing. Keep going. You've given me some ideas and you might even see me just start doing some comedy too. Maybe we can even bounce back and forth at each other or something.
You should. You definitely would do good at it. You should go enroll in a comedy school now and tell me how it goes.
Yeah, man. All right, Tony, thank you so much for being here on the What Are You Made Of show. All right, guys, you've been listening to your boy C-Rock and Tony Whatley on the What Are You Made Of show here in That One Studio. Until next time, be that one.
Music licensing reimagined.